Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Jason Trapp, Book 9, Dust Storm, by Jack Slater. Narrated by Terrence Aselford and performed by a full cast. Diyala Governorate, Iraq. The battering ram collided with the decrepit, sun-bleached wooden door with enough force to smash it off its hinges. It flew backward in a hail of splinters that appeared as ghostly flashes through the green view cast by the night vision goggles.
Sikorsky, breach!
Jason Trapp slapped the back of the helmet on the soldier in front of him, detecting a hint of wariness, probably even before the kid himself did. Private Sikorsky entered the breached doorway, pressing his back against the wall to the right and sliding across with his carbine raised and aimed in the opposite direction. Trapp's view opened up the second Sikorsky was inside, and he followed on muscle memory alone, sticking to the wall on the left and sidestepping along its full course. The rifle in his hands barely quivered despite the flood of adrenaline coursing through his veins.
Clear!
Trapp came to that conclusion himself. The beams of two infrared lasers swept across the room, visible only through their night vision goggles. Two more beams added to the light show as the final members of the Ranger fire team entered the isolated Iraqi farmhouse. Both men situated themselves in controlling positions over the internal doorway, which was the only other entry point to the room they had just breached. Like Trapp's and Sikorsky's, their actions were both textbook and deeply ingrained.
Chambers, door.
The desert heat was concentrated by the pounds of gear attached to his frame and locked in by his body armor. Sweat trickled down his forehead and burned his eyes. He raised his carbine's muzzle as the Army specialist crossed his path and then lowered it again the second he was through. The delay pained him. Successful building clearance operations relied on speed and the shock it caused the enemy.
Slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
The mantra was calming, as was the knowledge that barely a couple of seconds had elapsed since they'd burst into the farmhouse. He approached the next door, along with the remaining members of his fire team, all sheltering behind the cover of the thick mud brick walls as Chambers positioned himself to the right of the doorway.
Punch it.
Trapp steadied himself and prepared for a hail of bullets to fly through the open doorway. He imagined a grenade bouncing through the second it swung open, detonating and leaving his friends covered in blood. Chambers twisted his wrist and drew the door back in the same motion. From opposite sides of the doorway, Trapp and Sikorsky peered in, sweeping the secondary room with their weapons.
Clear!
Both men's voices were hoarse from the dust that hung in the air. Behind the door lay a hallway, with two doors on either side, which stretched out about 10 yards before twisting into a sharp left, following the L-shaped layout of the farmhouse building. Trapp wished he had a set of blueprints. But the last few months had taught him that Iraqi construction workers didn't exactly understand the concept of standardization. Every home they assaulted was different from the last. Any doorway, nook, or cranny could, and often did, harbor an insurgent armed with both a weapon and a burning desire to expel the American invaders.
Move! Move!
The command was redundant. Behind him, he heard the boots of a second fire team thundering into the farmhouse to cover their six.
Taking first left.
Sikorsky indicated he was going to hit the first of the four doorways.
You throw the flasher.
Copy.
The two men positioned themselves much like they had before, except with Sikorsky in Chambers' role and the others covering the remainder of the hallway. Terse statements carried from the second fire team now filing into the hallway. Trapp blocked out the distraction as he unclipped an M84 flashbang grenade from his utility belt, pulled the pin, and signaled to Sikorsky that he was ready.
Breaching.
As the Polish-American Ranger drew the door back, Trapp tossed the stun grenade inside. Sikorsky slammed the door shut once more and all four men covered their ears and eyes. The detonation rocked through the small group, the rickety wooden door doing little to stem the waves of sound and pressure. Sikorsky opened the door and Trapp swept the interior with the IR flashlight clipped to the end of his carbine, knowing that as he did so, one of the other two Rangers was doing the same thing on the other side. They were a well-oiled team. Had to be to execute missions like this night after night.
It's a fucking closet.
He grinned. The humor acting as a pressure release for the strain he was under as fire team leader before grim seriousness reasserted itself.
Next one. Go.
Chambers switched easily into his earlier position, pulling the door on the other side open so the fourth member of the team, Eddie Muniz, could toss a flashbang inside. The door closed. Chambers yanked the door back open. Sikorsky and Trap leaned in.
Gun!
The muzzle flash was impossibly bright through Trap's night vision goggles, the room hazy from the residual dust. Trap squeezed the trigger three times, putting all three rounds through the enemy's chest. It was overkill. Sikorsky had done the same thing. The insurgent stumbled backward, tripped over a piece of furniture, and collapsed to the deck. Laser beams swept the room. No further targets presented themselves.
Clear!
Clear!
The next two doorways were empty.
Clear!
One of Trap's four rangers took a knee, covering the end of the hallway with his carbine as the rest of them swept the rooms inside. Once more, the sound of boots followed them as the second fire team mopped up behind. Trap couldn't allow himself the time to process the fact that he'd just helped kill a man. All that mattered right now was the safety of his soldiers and the successful execution of the mission. Sweat trickled down his brow, again. He wiped it away with the back of his hand, again.
Let's keep moving.
He knew that at this very moment, another squad of rangers was assaulting the farmhouse from the opposite side. The aim of any building clearance op was to paralyze the defenders through the use of surprise, noise, and overwhelming force. The more doorways and windows you could enter simultaneously, the less the bad guys knew where to turn. The risk in a building like this was that you didn't know how far inside the friendly forces had made it. Around any corner, you could meet friend or foe, and the split second it took to work out which could cost a life. Sikorsky and Chambers took the right-hand wall and filed steadily forward in a low crouch. Seeing this, Trap and Muniz instinctively took the left. They were in position.
Now!
Trap thought he saw a grimace on Sikorsky's face as the lead man threw himself into danger from the relative safety of the covering wall. Light flashed through Trap's goggles from beyond the L as half a dozen gunshots rang out from the wrong direction. Sikorsky went down hard. Trap swiveled around the corner of the wall, his finger already depressing the trigger of his carbine, but about half a pound of pressure away from actually firing a shot. The laser swept across an empty space. A door slammed shut ahead of him.
Sikorsky?
I'm good. Took a round to the chest. The plate stopped it.
Trap jogged forward. Chambers took the right-hand side of the door and Trap the left. He nodded, and the soldier pulled the door open. This time, he didn't bother with a flashbang. He leaned inside and scanned the room for hostiles. No, not a room, a stairwell leading down. Had to be a basement. Unusual in this region, given the rocky desert substrate. He heard the cries of friendlies not too far away as they cleared the capacious farmhouse from the opposite side. He was pretty sure from the tone that the only bad guys left were right below him. Trap peered into the darkness of the stairwell.
Chambers, on me.
The insurgent's heavy tread echoed from the bottom of the stairs. Trap caught a flash of movement through his goggles as his target disappeared into the basement, jerking back behind cover for an instant in anticipation of a gunshot that never came. He sprang back around the doorpost and fired two tight bursts of his own to keep the guy pegged back.
Let's go.
Trap took the stairs two at a time, mentally preparing himself to ditch the night vision aids at any moment. His enemy was unlikely to have them, which meant the man was presently operating blind. It was 3 a.m, and this deep into Diala governorate, few people had access to electric light. But even a flashlight could easily blind him once the goggles amped up the glow they emitted several thousand times. The comforting thud of Chambers' boots on the wooden steps behind him followed him down. After swinging around a thick wooden post that appeared to support the floor above, Trap was presented with a cramped basement. His IR flashlight cast a pool of invisible illumination wherever he pointed his carbine. The space was filled with boxes stacked against every wall. Some were wood, others metal, all military. It was a weapons cache, just like the intelligence analysts had said. But where the hell was the insurgent? Two muzzle flashes lit up the room. The gunshots were wayward, tearing chunks of wood out of the floorboards above. Trap pivoted toward the source. He fired three of his own back, knowing as he pulled the trigger that he wouldn't hit a damn thing. He just wanted to keep the tango's head down. His ears rang from the trauma of the repeated gunshots and previous explosions.
I don't see him.
Me neither.
Trapp stepped forward, the other ranger moving in sync as they covered each other. He heard scuffling ahead of him. One of the ammunition crates in front of him shifted a few inches and threatened to topple over.
What the fuck is he doing?
Put your hands up!
Trapp was mentally cursing the Iraqi interpreter who was supposed to follow close behind. As usual, the guy was missing in action. He just had to hope that the bad guy had watched enough Hollywood B-movies to catch the gist of his commands.
Drop your weapon, and you get to live.
There was more scuffling, but no reply. Trapp didn't know what was happening, and he didn't like the unknown. He made the split-second decision to end this himself. He looked at Chambers.
Cover me.
Roger.
Trapp weaved through the haphazardly placed ammunition crates, just hoping that none of them was rigged to blow. He was pretty sure a sweep of his flashlight had revealed a stack of artillery shells in the process of being rigged up as IEDs. This was the kind of place you didn't want firearms going off and bullets ricocheting in every direction. Unfortunately, that was kind of out of his hands. The basement was only a few yards across. It took him a matter of seconds to close the distance. He brought his carbine down as he crested the final row of crates, preparing to open fire. But the insurgent was gone. Trapp blinked stupidly. Behind the stack of crates, a hole gaped in the wall. It had been covered by a metal trapdoor that now lay messily to one side, revealing a narrow tunnel. The strap of the guy's AK had gotten tangled with the trapdoor chain, and he'd left the weapon behind as he attempted to flee. Trapp doubted that the guy had had the foresight to pick up a sidearm amid the panic of the night assault on his out-of-the-way compound. His brain computed as a near certainty that the insurgent was now unarmed. So, he went after him. Camp Anaconda. Trapp jogged alone toward the tall concrete walls surrounding the HQ of Joint Special Operation Command's Task Force Center in Logistical Support Area Anaconda. Even in his head, it was a prize heifer of a military acronym. By the time he arrived at the entrance gate, Sikorsky had caught up with him.
You're one crazy motherfucker, you know that?
It's your one crazy motherfucker, you know that, Sergeant. How's the chest?
Yes, sir. No, sir. I'm all good. So, you heard?
Heard what?
Trapp fished in the pockets of his 10 combat fatigues for his entrance badge.
We hit the jackpot. Not sure exactly what, but the colonel's handling this one personally. Bad news is the CAG boys are sniffing around. Guess they want all the glory. Like always.
CAG was yet another military acronym in a sea of them. It stood for Combat Applications Group, an obscure term for the organization the rest of the world knew as Delta Force. Trapp's own unit, the 75th Ranger Regiment, worked closely with Delta as part of Task Force Center, the special ops grouping assigned to the Baghdad area.
What glory?
I guess that's what we're here to find out.
They passed through the security checkpoint. The MP behind the desk scanned their badges and buzzed them through the gate. Over the past 2 years, Task Force Center had settled into an easy rhythm as part of JSOC's contribution to ending the Iraqi Civil War. This was already Trapp's second six-month deployment at Camp Anaconda. During that time, JSOC had invented a new set of tactics for hunting high-value targets and rolling up the insurgent networks they commanded. Instead of them spending weeks planning each operation, hitting a target, and then rolling out without a second thought, the new model emphasized the value of close collaboration between special operations units and the intelligence outfits that fed them. Trapp's fire team, now geared up for an operation 3, 4, sometimes even 5 nights a week, they would hit a target on a Monday, capture the insurgents inside alive if possible, and if not, carry away all intelligence materials. While the operator slept, interrogators and intelligence analysts would spend the day drawing up a new mission based on the previous night's work. By Tuesday night, Trapp was usually on a Black Hawk with his carbine clipped to his plate carrier. Just another day in paradise.
But you must have heard something. You look like a kid on Halloween.
I don't like candy, but I like killing jihadis. All I heard is something's got the colonel real exercised. And we were the only op on the board last night. So my deduction, dear Watson, is that we had something to do with it.
They stepped through the automatic glass doors that led into the operations complex to be greeted by a freezing blast of air conditioning, a pleasant contrast to the dry desert heat.
I guess you were right.
He had caught sight of an unremarkable man with a thick beard wearing civilian hiking gear and a pair of Oakley shades resting on top of his head, heading in the same direction. Unlike both Trapp and Sikorsky, who were attired in their army-issued fatigues, Delta operators made a habit of eschewing wearing anything as undignified as the uniform of the country they served. His name was Breyer, Trapp recalled. They'd met only briefly, though something about the man had rubbed him the wrong way. Most of the Delta guys wore an air of arrogance like aftershave. His was just particularly fragrant. The briefing room was populated by a roughly even mix of uniformed army personnel and casually, yet uniformly, dressed Delta boys and OGA types. Trapp and Sikorsky entered and eyed up seats toward the back. Captain Myers, the company commander, was at the front of the room. His camouflage shirt sleeves were rolled up to just above the elbows, and he had a thick mustache, supposedly in the name of cultural sensitivity. Though since his primary job involved sitting in an air-conditioned headquarters building and ordering his men to kick down the doors of locals in the middle of the night, all it brought to mind for Trapp was the story of the kid sticking his finger in a hole in the dike. He clapped his hands as Trapp and Sikorsky, now joined by Chambers, took their seats.
Congratulations, gentlemen. Sterling work last night.
Trapp kept his face impassive. A couple of the Delta operators shifted in their seats to eye up the recipients of such praise. Breyer was one of them. He didn't look too impressed.
One last thing before we start.
Myers surveyed his men's faces individually in turn, seeming to consider which man he intended to choose.
Sergeant Trapp, when was the last time you sat in on an interrogation?
Trapp flushed. One of the things that made Task Force Center's approach to combating the militant threat so lethal and clinical was the close integration of intelligence teams with the shooters they fed. Part of that involved men like him being present for interrogation sessions, and damn the need for sleep.
A few days, sir. I guess.
Do I need to check the logs?
Maybe a week.
We'll split the difference at two, Sergeant. Either way, it's not good enough. I know you're tired. I'm tired. We're all damn tired. I want to go home and see my wife. But as long as we're here in the sandbox, we do as the Colonel wants. The Colonel is God. His wishes are our Ten Commandments. Understood?
Yes, sir.
So I don't need to engrave them on stone tablets?
No, sir. I'll attend the next one.
And the one after that?
And the one after that, sir. Every day until the job is done.
Every day until the job is done. That's what it'll take. And that's it from me.
He gestured to a lieutenant from the battalion's S2 intelligence section and took a seat. Trapp recalled his name was Casey, or thought he did. He was a little too far away to make out the name badge on the man's breast. The lieutenant leaned over the desk in front of them and hit a button on a computer keyboard. Behind the briefing table, a large projector flashed to life, at first displaying a blue screen, before the device warmed up and the familiar outline of a PowerPoint presentation came into view. It was a little-known fact in the outside world that the Army, hell, the whole U.S. military, couldn't function without its access keys from Microsoft Office. Trapp had sat through more briefings than he cared to remember. Most of them were interminably dull hours of chaff that you had to sit through just in case one grain of intel saved your life. A booking photograph of an Arab male in his early 40s appeared on the projector screen. His thick beard was unkempt, and he looked disheveled and exhausted.
This man is Sharif Jamil. He is the enemy combatant captured in last night's operation. Our records indicate he was a former school teacher turned Iraqi army. Shiite, not Sunni. He was let go with the rest of them in 03.
Whose dumbass decision was that?
I have the floor.
The officer's expression cracked.
I believe his name was Paul. But there's no sense fighting over spilt milk. Our job is to mop it up.
Mop them up?
Potato, potato.
He allowed a few chuckles around the room. The time allotted for levity was over.
The good news is that Sharif is singing like a canary. Not just that, but he was sitting on nearly a ton of explosives, RPGs, ammo, and EFPs.
EFP stood for Explosively Formed Penetrator, Trapp knew. They were a form of IED that, since entering the insurgents' repertoire, had quickly become the single deadliest killer of U.S. and Iraqi troops. An explosive detonation heated a piece of metal to temperatures of thousands of degrees before hurtling it toward a target. The superheated metal cut through the armor plating on tanks, Bradleys, and MRAPs with pitiful ease before cooling and shattering into hundreds of jagged shards, traveling nearly at the speed of sound once it was inside the vehicle's personnel compartment, with predictably messy results. Sikorsky's hand shot up, and he waved it energetically until the lieutenant pointed to him.
What's the bad news, sir?
I can always count on you to bring the mood down, eh, Private Sikorsky?
It's what I do best, sir. That and killing...
And killing jihadis. Yes, Sikorsky, I've heard that one before. Say it too many times and I'll put you in for a psych eval.
I'll workshop some new material then, sir.
That would be wise. The bad news is that we also recovered a casing from a Misag one-man pad. For those of you who didn't pay attention in high school, that's an Iranian surface-to-air missile. A copy of a Chinese design, but a hell of a lot more potent than the 1970s junk that's been floating around in insurgent hands until now.
Shit.
Shit is right. And that's why the Colonel is so interested in what you boys found last night. If more than a few of these missiles have made it across the border, then our air mobility is in grave danger. IEDs in the dirt and missiles in the air is a real bad combo.
He turned to the next slide.
Evidence found at the site indicates that it was being run by the Shabani network. For anyone who wasn't awake the last five times we rolled up on one of their facilities, they're quickly becoming the preeminent pain in our collective asses. Intelligence indicates that a third of all captured munitions in our area of responsibility come from this one Iranian-backed group, and that proportion is rising quickly.
Sikorsky stuck up his hand once again.
Lieutenant?
What is it, Private?
I was hoping you had some more good news for me, sir.
As a matter of fact, I do. Mr. Jamil was most cooperative when the full gravity of his present predicament was explained to him. He gave up two locations, another Shabani network safe house and a residential address. We intend to hit both of them tonight before they have the chance to disappear into the ether. Any questions at this point?
Do we have any information on expected numbers of defenders?
Breyer didn't look up from a pad on which he was making copious notes.
Working on it. Pattern of life analysis from previous overhead surveillance of the area indicates that the residential address is occupied by a family. We judge it likely that this is a secondary target.
We'll take the safe house.
No dice. The 75th sniffed out the lead on this one. Our guys get to hit the safe house. Same squad as last night for the sake of continuity. Policy is clear on this one.
The operator, though only an NCO, locked gazes with Captain Myers for a few seconds with the testosterone-flooded intensity of a rutting stag before dropping his eyes back to his pad.
Fine.
Casey, the intel lieutenant, allowed the tension to die down.
We'll break here. I want everyone back here in 2 hours. We'll draw up mission packs for both squads. Dismissed. Hoo-ah!
Myers lifted his head from his paperwork.
Sergeant Trapp, a word?
Sikorsky shot Trapp a mock pitying look but couldn't conceal his grin as he turned to leave. Trapp winced back, then walked to the front of the briefing room and stood to attention in front of the officer.
At ease.
Myers dismissed the formality with a flick of his hand.
Sergeant, you mind telling me exactly what the fuck you were thinking last night?
Trapp judged that until he had more information, it was best to play it simple.
Sir?
Myers narrowed his gaze.
Are we gonna play this game?
I didn't think I was playing.
Where did you apprehend the suspect, Sergeant?
The basement of the target farmhouse, sir. It was in my after-action report.
Exactly where in the basement, Trapp?
Trapp paused as he realized where the captain was going with this.
It was an escape tunnel, sir.
A tunnel. So, let's circle back to my initial question. What the fuck were you doing going in there without backup? You know who has to write the letter to your family if you take a bullet to the face, Sergeant?
If it makes it easier for you, sir. I don't have any.
Common sense or family?
Trapp gave him a wry grin.
Either, sir.
Myers circled a finger in the air.
Well, the 75th is your family now. Understood? and none of us wants to see you under a white cross in Arlington, least of all me. You're a good ranger, Trap, and you're a hell of a lot more useful to me alive than dead. Let's keep it that way.
Trap caught up to Sikorsky outside the building. He noted the sour look on Sikorsky's face.
Hey, Sikorsky. What's up?
Didn't you hear?
Hear what?
Those Delta assholes pulled rank. Guess they got word to the Colonel and he gave the okay for them to hit the safe house instead of us. We got shunted off to special teams, like usual.
This wasn't the first time that Delta had muscled in on a Ranger operation. Trap guessed it probably wouldn't be the last. It came with the territory of having a colonel from Delta in command of Task Force Center. He was annoyed, but didn't show it. Deliberately. A year back, before he'd made sergeant, he might have had a different reaction. But now, he was a fire team leader with soldiers of his own to look out for. A few months from now, he might head up his own squad. Then again, his contract was nearly up. Maybe he'd quit the army altogether. Sit Mai Tais on a beach somewhere and do something more rewarding with his life than hitching his wagon to a freight train of slaughter that never seemed to mean anything. If he didn't get stop-lost, that was.
Sikorsky, when did you find the time to have your ear surgically attached to the ground?
The joke provoked a grudging smile, as he'd suspected it might. Sikorsky packed a fearsome temper into an ordinarily sunny demeanor, but his moods came and went like summer squalls. He reached up and wiggled his left ear.
It's detachable, see? I just pull it off and all the little birdies fly right to me.
Well, it is what it is.
It was a refrain that might as well be permanently inked onto his own skin, given how often he found himself repeating it.
And hey, maybe this was the day you were supposed to die. Consider this your lucky escape. Divine intervention, whatever you want to call it. So, we'll hit the secondary target instead. Who knows? Maybe we'll turn up a diamond in the rough.
Comcheck!
Trap was fighting the roar generated by a row of a half dozen Black Hawk helicopters parked side by side on the runway, their rotors spinning nearly at takeoff velocity. In turn, the soldiers in his fire team confirmed that their radios were working. Each man was clear on the parameters and rules of engagement for their revised operation. Frustrating as each found the last-minute change of plans, it wasn't an unusual occurrence. 6 years into the global war on terror, the halcyon days when operators were afforded weeks of preparation before hitting a target were long gone. Hell, at the relatively ancient age of just 23 years young, Trap had never even gotten to experience them. The concept of operations for 21st century counterterrorism professionals emphasized speed above all else. Speed kept the enemy off balance. Speed kept fellow Americans alive. Speed led to dead terrorists, and there was no higher goal for Task Force Center than that. Trap shot the Black Hawk's crew chief a thumbs up to signal that he and his men were ready to roll. As the mustachioed airman touched the tips of his thumb and index finger and turned away to relay that information to the pilots, he pulled his night vision aids into place and bathed the world in green. Around the chopper's confined cabin, he saw Sikorsky and the others had done the same. It was difficult to make out expressions on their faces as they sat back, cradling their weapons. Were they excited? Afraid? It didn't matter. They would follow their orders. Now, all that was left to do was wait. It didn't take long. The choppers rose off LSS Anaconda's rubber-scarred asphalt one by one, spaced about 5 seconds apart. First came the three aircraft carrying the Delta team hitting the primary target. They angled sharply into the darkness, leaving a trail of burned aviation fuel behind them. Then it was the Ranger's turn. Trap's stomach dropped away as the chopper rose into the air.
Security screen unit moving into position.
A radio transmission squawked into his earpiece, informing him that the regular army unit tasked with creating a security screen 5 kilometers out from the target was moving into position. They would also provide the quick reaction force, though he hoped that it wouldn't prove necessary.
Fucking B-team shit. Hey, cut it out. Eyes on the prize until we're back in these choppers. You understand? Keep the radio clear unless you got something important to say.
Sikorsky gritted his teeth but reluctantly nodded his agreement. He sat back, his neck rigid with tension. Trapp didn't push it any further. He knew it was just the soldier's way of blowing off steam, of coming to terms with the fact that he was imminently, willingly, placing himself in harm's way. He looked away and checked over his weapons and equipment, even though he'd already done so a dozen times. Each of the men in this helicopter was going through their own private ritual right now. Maybe this was his. Powerful gusts of hot desert air flushed through the open sides of the helicopter as the minutes ticked by, tugging at Trapp's dark fatigues and momentarily cooling his sweat-beaded brow. It was a losing battle. A droplet of the salty liquid rolled haltingly down the side of his temple before the wind tugged it into his mouth. The taste was sharp and bitter. He fiddled with his rifle, checked his ammunition, was stowed in the same pouch as it had been 5 minutes ago and the 5 minutes before that.
5 minutes out.
The crew chief held out the same number of digits on his right hand to emphasize the message.
Get ready.
Trapp swallowed and stared out into the darkness of night. Occasionally, they passed a small settlement in the distance, just a few glimmers of electric light on a blanket of sandy blackness. Sometimes there was the outline of a building against the ground, which likely housed men and women and children who lived much as their grandparents had, and then it was gone.
60 seconds.
Body check.
Trapp turned to Muniz and checked that all the soldiers' gear was where it was supposed to be. Anxiety flickered in his stomach, but he kept his tone steady.
You all know what you have to do. Don't take any unnecessary risks.
The Black Hawk's nose dropped, and the aircraft arrowed toward the ground. Though Trapp couldn't see them, he knew the other two choppers in the strike formation had followed suit. Somewhere beyond his field of view, an Apache helicopter gunship was also circling, its crew desperate to rain hell down on anyone, either brave or foolhardy enough to shoot back. Leaning out the side of the helicopter, Trapp saw the target looming into sight. It was pitch black, without a single glimmer of light, electric or otherwise. The building was rectangular, surrounded by a chest-high metal fence whose purpose, he surmised, was to keep farm animals in, not heavily armed operators out. Around it was arrayed several outbuildings, none of which was obviously occupied.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
A painful jolt ran up his spine as the Black Hawk's wheels met solid earth. Trapp didn't allow himself to worry about it. He urged his soldiers out of the chopper.
Go, go!
Not that they needed any encouragement. They looked like a well-oiled machine. Boots thudded against the rocky, sandy ground. Backwash from the rotors hurled dust and tiny stones into the air. They scoured every square inch of exposed skin, and Trapp squeezed his eyes shut, temporarily blinding himself to avoid suffering a more permanent fate. On either flank of the bird that had just disgorged Trapp and his fire team, another Black Hawk was doing the same. He ignored them and sprinted ahead, knowing that each team had its own objective. Sikorsky got to the metal fence first and let his rifle fall to his chest as he reached out and vaulted it in one impressive leap. The second he was over, he dropped into a crouch and brought the weapon back up to his shoulder to cover the rest of the team. Muniz came last, weighed down by the battering ram.
Over!
Sikorsky pushed out of his squat immediately, dashed for the building's only visible door, and covered the source of danger the moment he stopped. Behind them, the first Black Hawk lifted back into the sky, followed an instant later by the next. The howl of their engines faded quickly, though this was partly the effect of the adrenaline blocking out everything that didn't present an immediate danger. Trapp, Sikorsky, and Muniz flattened themselves against the farmhouse's brick wall.
Ram.
Ready.
Hit it.
The battering ram smashed into the door about 2 inches above where a lock would ordinarily be, but wasn't. The top third of the door shattered into chunks and splinters. The heavily muscled Muniz had done this hundreds of times between training and the real thing. The best lock on the market would not have stood a chance. Sikorsky pulled the pin on the concussion grenade and tossed it through the hole the ram had created.
Flash out? Yeah!
From the other side of the building, another grenade was tossed inside. Trapp took a deep breath, shoved his fingers into his ears, and squeezed his eyes shut. Right on cue, the grenade detonated. In balletic synchrony, the members of the fire team stepped over the now discarded ram and into the farmhouse with Sikorsky on point. The beams of the laser aiming aids on their rifles resembled lightsabers as they panned across the otherwise empty space inside. As the young yet hellishly experienced Sikorsky entered the room, sticking to the far right wall, Trap did the same on the left. Their movements echoed those of the previous night and the one before that, the basics having been hammered into them during week after week of practice in shoot houses stateside and perfected after months of the real thing. Trap kept his back to the wall as he swept the aim of his rifle left and right across what was evidently the building's kitchen. Metal pans hung on hooks, and he was forced to step around a small gas stove stowed by the wall. Trap's legs moved as if by muscle memory, as if they were fastened to tracks and could do only one thing. His pulse jackhammered in his temple. He felt his cone of vision narrowing, another familiar effect of the adrenaline. He forced himself to check left and right, down and up, dropping his rifle as another member of his team stepped into his line of fire, then raising it just as quickly.
Clear.
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 Next door. Keep moving.
The fire team moved toward an internal doorway on the other side of the kitchen. Trap stayed back to provide cover as they got ready to breach. And then it started to open. Trap saw the other members of his team backpedal away from the entranceway, hurriedly bringing up their rifles as they prepared to face this new potential threat. But they were too late. A shape stepped through the door. All the Trap could make out through his night vision was that the person was tall and carrying a weapon. He squeezed his trigger before Sikorsky or any of the others even had their weapons halfway up. The rifle's discharge was impossibly loud in the confines of the cramped kitchen. The shape dropped to the ground, dead before it landed.
Go!
Trap ran toward the body and kicked the weapon aside, dropping to his knee for a moment to check the man's pulse. Definitely gone. It wasn't an act of compassion. He just needed to confirm that he wasn't leaving a threat on his six. As he momentarily paused, the rest of the fire team stepped into the unknown. Trap rose and followed the green laser beam stretching out ahead of him. The faint scent of oils and spices gave way to a forgotten musk as he passed through the open doorway into the hallway. It wasn't long. On the right-hand side were two doors. The second one was half open. A sound was coming from behind it, though it was indistinct.
Keep moving! Sikorsky, cover that second door!
On it.
The remaining members of the team moved as one. Trap and Chambers covered the first doorway. Muniz held up two fingers, then kicked the door in, revealing an empty bedroom. The bed itself was just a single mattress on the floor, covered in a couple of stained sheets. Next to it was an unloaded pistol and half a dozen rifle magazines, as well as a scattering of unspent rounds that crunched underfoot.
Clear!
Only a couple of seconds having elapsed since they breached the door, the three soldiers swung back around into the hallway.
What the fuck?
Gun!
The second doorway had swung open, and a man rushed out and away from the Rangers. A pistol was clutched in his right hand. He had something pressed against his chest with his left forearm. It looked like a bag or... Acid rose in Trap's throat.
Don't shoot! Piece of shit has a hostage. It's a kid.
Copy.
Keep pushing forward.
Revulsion was now driving him on. What kind of man could use a child like that? Not one that deserved to survive the night. The four men moved up the hallway as one. As they reached the doorway that the hostage taker had just emerged from, it flew open a second time before bouncing back off the wall amid a shower of dust.
Civilians!
A child ran toward Trap, followed by the pale green silhouette of a naked woman.
Oh, what the hell?
Trap stared stupidly down at the kid, sprinting quickly in his direction. What was he supposed to do? Tackle it? He'd never been good with kids. The child was through his legs and out the door behind him before he had a chance to react. He grabbed the woman instead, letting his rifle fall against the clip on his chest and gripping her by the torso before slamming her to the ground, soft flesh meeting hard earth. She cried out in terror. The force of the impact caused Trap to wince, but he didn't have time to search her, and this was safest for everybody involved.
What the hell is going on?
Sikorsky dropped to a knee and pinned the woman to the ground with an armbar.
Where's the kid?
Trap reached into a pouch for a set of flex cuffs. He pulled them up and cinched them tight around the prisoner's wrists. She kept kicking.
I'm guessing it's hers.
Shit. They probably both are. That bastard.
Trap tied the woman's ankles and rose back to his feet. He hated having to do it, but he couldn't be sure she wasn't playing an innocent victim.
She's not going anywhere. Let's move.
Before Trap had a chance to react, a fierce battle erupted outside. A smattering of different weapons loudly announced their presence, and not all of them matched those carried by his fellow Rangers.
Sounds like he wasn't alone.
Yep, sounds like.
The most obvious explanation was that more militants had been hiding out in the farm's outbuildings. Judging by the volume of fire now ringing out, those elements were now engaging the rest of the assault team outside. Suppressing the urge to simply sprint directly toward the danger, Trapp took stock of the situation. They had at least two civilian children to watch out for, the one that had been taken hostage and the one he'd stupidly allowed to slip through his legs. Add one cold-blooded hostage taker and an unknown number of armed insurgents, and things had the potential to slip from not great to really fucking bad, and quickly. He rapidly outlined a plan.
Look, alive is better, but I'd rather the kid survive than this motherfucker, no matter how bad Command wants to get their claws into him. Understood?